How far did you go on that?
Up to Cochran and Clute.
Yeah.
And up into Apsley and all in that area. Pennon Falls, Burke's Falls, Kinmouth, all in that area.
Where's Clute?
Clute, it's out from Cochran. A little place out. And Fox was there at the time we were sent to Clute. So we had a nice visit with him.
Clute was one of those communities that was established after the First World War. The other thing was it was established and it was a structured community, and they had a considerable amount of planning into that part of the world. And what they tried to do is when people came in to that part, they tried to get them to live in a more or less a formal area, similar like a big one half of the township or something, instead of one hotel going out in the bush here, another one going out in the bush there, another one going out there, so that they could provide services to the community. Mm-hmm. What they found was that people would go out and carve a farm out of the wilderness, mm-hmm. and the next thing is kids want to go to school. You can't have a school for one family. Mm-hmm. And so this was that reason I know a little bit about was because the chap that I worked with, his parents, they'd taken up that, they farmed there.
Oh, yeah.
Until about it was around the mid-20s or late-20s, and then they moved down, bought a farm up in Tara, and that was where they were born and raised there. Mm-hmm. They had originally settled in Clute.
Was that French? A lot of French in there? Somewhere along the river. It seems to me there's a lot of French in there.
I've heard that some spares were small and I had to do it all. And then usually the next day do the spelling, the kids' things and baby contests and you name it. I've gone through it all. And I recall at Turtle Creek, we had a baby contest. He asked me to do the babies. And they were in this huge tent. I'm sure there were 60 maybe, I don't know. Terrible. And they didn't have any way. I finally set up a way to sort of weigh them. They didn't actually weigh them. They had no facilities, but we had to come up with some kind of guidelines. Didn't I give the prize to the Story baby, Brad? They had relatives there.
Oh, yeah.
This would be Pat Story's parents.
Yeah.
One of that, whether it was a little girl, I think. This would be Pat Story's sister, I guess.
They probably knew her.
That's right. The people that were in that wouldn't know, but the workers, the officials knew I came from Bradford, of all those babies, and I didn't know her even. And when they asked her address, this is what she said, and I nearly flipped. I remember that. And another time at Apsley was a pillowcase, an article made from a pillowcase, and this apron was yellow, and I decided that I was going to weed out some of these things. I got into trouble a few times because I weeded out things and didn't give them a prize. And the lady working with me in this apron, I didn't give it first prize. And she said, she was so angry, she just turned red. She says, that apron has won first prize for the last 10 years. And I said, well, it didn't win today. Another time I was judging a cake and I wondered why I couldn't get the knife in it. It just wouldn't cut. And when I did get the piece out, they had taken cardboard and had it all in the center to make the cake look nice and high. And when in fact it was sad as can be and it fallen. That was why I couldn't get it cut, because the paper was in it.
So what
fruit cake was a real premium in those days. It was expensive to make, and of course you would cut it because you don't want to use it again. Well, when I cut it, this piece, another piece fell out, and here she had just turned it over and glued it with corn syrup or something. And she had put the other side up so that I couldn't see it, because some judges do not take a piece right to the bottom, but I do, so that it's not used again. I don't think that's fair, but they had taken a little corner, so she patched it. And when I lifted it up, the piece fell out. So I just set the two pieces on top. They weren't the same thing.
There was one thing Mother used to say, that when the cake flopped like that, one of you kids went to slam the screen door.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true, or is that anything to that?
No, not really, but they always used to say that. Maybe the baking powders weren't as good then. And I've judged turnip kraut. That's a wonderful thing to judge, turnip kraut.
experiences.
But it was our summer holiday, actually. Yeah. Kind of fun. My parents used to babysit her, Grandpa and Helen.
Now, what you McCollum tells me that Bill Fuller and them said turnip pie is really good as a dessert. Did you ever hear?
No, I've used squash, but never turnip.
Yeah, he said turnip pie is just as good as squash or pumpkin pie.
Could be, if it's flavored, I suppose yeah. It would be. You could mash it up the same as pumpkin, why wouldn't you?
Well, I just...
Yeah, well, I remember making squash pie because I have a friend who likes it, and he had an operation, and I left one at home, and Jim said, oh my, this is good, Mother, and I said, well, it's squash, and put down the fork, he would never eat it again. I never could make a squash pie again. Squash wasn't for a pie.
How did you get into square dancing in the car?
Oh, that's a long story, too. I guess that goes back to high school. And, I don't know. I guess I just got started in that. And I'd come along a little bit at a time, and a little bit at a time. I remember the first time I ever got paid, and it was in the war, and it was in an old town hall, and they asked me to come and call square dances. And I think I got a dollar, and I went home happy as hell. I made it off. And my dad says, what? He says, and you would charge them? And it was for the Red Cross? And I never thought of it that way. So he went back into town the next day and gave them $2. But however, it went on from there. And I don't know, I just enjoyed it. And I got doing a little bit more of it, a little bit more of it. But it was never one of my main occupations, but I enjoyed doing it.
Who did you get the hint from to do it? Anybody in particular out there?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I started at high school and then going to the dances in Guilford. If the regular caller wasn't there, I used to call the odd square dance. And then I got started calling Bond Head.
Well, you learned a few from the book, too.
Well, not very much. I got a book, but then I never used it. And... then I got away from it. And then they get me back at it again. But you've got to be today. It's a profession, and if you don't keep up with it, you know I'm out of touch with it now. I can call the odd old square dance, but there's professional callers now, and they get well paid.
Yeah.
Like the last time, I think somebody asked me to call one. You know, and there's $50 in it. Well, I'm not up to date enough on it that I wouldn't do it. I still call the odd square dance in Newtown, but that's all. I believe that's the younger generation.
One of the things, I realize that you wouldn't be very old, but do you remember when they, Professor Day and did the basic canal?
Yes. I wasn't very old, but I do remember when they were digging this canal. Or down there.
Down. And have you any recollection of what the machinery looked like?
Not really. Only ordinary machinery. The old scow that was digging the canal.
You know anybody got any pictures of it?
No. I don't think so.
We've been trying to get someone who could give us enough information that we could do a sketch of it and do a picture of it and what it looked like or something like that.
No, and just down here in Domes, you know, they started to shoot up there and they run into quicksand, as I understand it. They backed up and then went to farther south. That's why there's the V in there. But, I don't know whether Margaret might have any. You see, cameras weren't too much in vogue in those days. If you took a picture, that meant something. It isn't like today.
Funny thing when you mentioned that camera, not, but McDonald's always had cameras and took pictures back in the old dams. And where it ever came from, I don't know. It's just a funny thing.
Caitlin, when we, Joe and I were talking about this the other day, when that is the Simcoe Road, when did it go through down to the marsh? Do you remember when it was?
Yes, yes. I remember when that bridge was built. Like previous to that, when Turner's used to have some marsh, they used to have a boat ferry with a rope on it. There'd just be the Doan Bridge. Yeah, it was in my time that that Simcoe Road used to just go down to Jim Archer's Lane. You remember that? So
they called that the Given Road, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess
Jim Archer's Given Road.
Yeah, and then they made it into a road.
Well, was it true then that Vic Turner sold the other truck? He didn't give it, he sold it to the town?
Oh, I don't know whether he sold it or he gave it. I don't suppose he gave it. He gave it for a nominal fee, I would imagine.
That's what I was wondering.
I don't know. I guess Vic isn't around to confirm.
Well, how did Emerson get across then?
He must have got across
by the Doan Bridge.
By the Doan Bridge.
I didn't make that. That's one bridge I forgot the other day, the Doan Bridge.
The Doan Bridge is the one that's there now.
Yeah.
It was replaced.
Yeah.
So was it built at the time that they did they built the canal?
That must have been built when they built the canal.
Yeah.
The Doan Bridge has always been there as long as I can remember.
Doan Bridge and then the Sutherland Bridge next to
that.
Yeah.
And the Sutherland Bridge no longer exists.
No.
How did they level out the top of the dike? In other words, when they brought the material up and pumped it there, it would be all muck and wet and soggy and everything else like that. And that was the basis of the canal bank road, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And how did they, what did they do with it? Just kind of go along with the horse and graders and level it?
Oh, I guess so. They
that was a lot of years later, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was well dried out when they went.
Yeah, it kind of leveled itself out, I suppose. And I
people did their own, didn't they? I think if I remember right. Wanted to get there in and out, so they just leveled their own. And that was it. I think bulldozers were around then, though. I don't think it'd be a horse scraper, would it? I don't know.
I don't know, Joe. I don't know.
You wouldn't have any. Interest like in the marsh, like it's getting involved with it or anything like that?
Not till I started to weed at 15 cents an hour.
Well, you got a raise, and I got 10, 5 and 10.
What was that?
Well, after they got it going, that was my first job.
Oh. Everybody started in the marsh, I think.
So who did you work for?
Ernie Muzzin.
Muzzin, yeah.
Yep. And Albert Gasparo, he was another one, an early one down there in Doan's Bridge, Doan's Marsh.
How do you spell those two names?
Ernie Muzzin, M-U-Z-Z-I-N, I would think.
And the other one is
Albert Gasparo, G-A-S-P-E-R-O.
Where did you scuffle with the horse?
Oh, that was later. That was later scuffling potatoes.
And so you'd weed on the marsh, or
yeah, by hand.
By hand, 15 cents an hour.
7 o'clock in the morning, 6 at night.
Some of that was when you put in the day's work, eh?
Yes.
How old were you then?
No, I'd be maybe 16, 17, maybe 18.
And what would you be? What kind of vegetables would you be eating?
Oh, onions, carrots.
Thin,
celery.
Thin to reduce.
No, they never thin very much.
How many acres would they have how many acres would the Muzzin grow like?
He might have had 5 acres. 5 acres was a farm in the early parts of the marsh. Then the big farmers got to be 10. Then they've kept growing ever since.
Mm-hmm. June was just mentioning about scuffing. Did they bring scuffing in?
Well, then they started to grow potatoes. And then I used to go down with the horse and buggy and a scuffer, scuffle potatoes. That would be back when in the 40s. Dollar an hour, horse and scuffer, the result.
Did you ever get involved in harvesting?
Not very much. I used to cut a bit of celery.
Speaking of harvesting, all the time that you had the farm, you would stew thrash or the barn thrash?
Both. We were barn thrashing. And then we got our own machine. And then we'd call it stew thrash. Then eventually we got to combine.
Who had the machine when you were barn thrashing?
Mostly Bill MacArthur. He would be a man that would be very worthwhile to talk to.
We had a chat with him. Very, very, very interesting.
Bill would have a lot of memos.
Yes. Yeah.
Memos, mementos.
Memos.
Well, he called the other night to talk. Was he not the one that called you?
Called
just to call him.
Did he call you too?
Yeah.
He must do the whole circuit.
Says I haven't talked to you for a long time. I haven't seen you.
People are lonely.
Yeah, that's what it is, especially him.
You know, we get involved with our life and we forget about others.
Oh, true.
Well, then you had to leave the farm, you went to sell shoes.
Oh, that wasn't very long.
But that started you out on your career.
No, I used to do work for Farm Credit.
Oh, right.
That got me in appraisal work. I don't know. I ran into Mr. Lashley or Gordor or somebody, and they suggested that to me. So I went down to see them, and they suggested they needed somebody in this area on
this
a part-time basis.
Was this Farm Credit or was it Junior
Farm?
Farm Credit. Was it Junior Farmer Loan?
This was before Junior Farmers came into being. So that was a nice experience. I enjoyed that. The only problem was they always wanted you to work while you were the busiest on the farm.
Mm-hmm. And so what would be your responsibility working for them?
Well, it was more or less to go out and appraise the farm and send in your report to them.
Well, that was before my time.
Yeah. Were you not around when Corridor came into our place and it showed me how to fill out?
Then you would have been at Sisman's first because you went to Sisman's in 56. Because you were at Sisman's when I called you from home to take you to the hospital. And I don't remember before that you were working for Corridor or Credit. So we haven't got that straight of when you started what?
Might have been in the 50s. And that led me into highways.
There, that's
where
it probably went.
Then you joined the staff of highways?
Yeah. Yeah, I was there for 22 years.
Mm-hmm. What year did you join?
1962.
Mm-hmm. And you were basically there doing?
Appraising and negotiating.
Well, you negotiated first, then. So you were in prison and you were trying.
Yeah. Well, I've done both.
There's a big change in the appraisal of land from time to time, for sure.
He used to take Jimmy the odd time with him. Jim always said he was going to be an appraiser because it was a nice job.
Any particular projects that we worked on working for highways. Bring back that were
lots of
writing ones. I know one that I heard you think about was the Peterborough Bypass. I mean, that was a fun one.
What about the old guy up at Cool Water, Jerry? You tangled up with him and six?
Yeah.
You got tangled up with the old guy, did you?
Yeah.
See, I wonder if he's still living.
I went up one time with another guy on that one, but I didn't settle that one, I don't think. That down in Niagara Falls and 401, that was a toughie. 406, that was a rough one. And of course, anything around 401 was rough. I had a lot of fun on Highway 10. I had an experience there one time. They were building Highway 10, widening it, and they put an easement down beside the lane of a very nice place, and they hadn't got it fixed up, and they kind of made a mess of the garden. And the woman had called into our boss, and really raising hell. And our boss is a pretty easygoing guy, but swears a lot and curses and swears and jumps and hollers. I happened to be in the office. He'd come out and go, bop, 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 see what the hell you're doing. Goddamn, set her, get her, set her down, do something, or do something. And he was cursing and swearing over there. And I went up and went into her, and she'd come out just to jump him. And she jumped and hollered, swore. She did everything she could, and I wouldn't answer to her. And she hollered and hollered, and finally, and when she got through hollering, she says, "I just knew highways would do this to me." I go, "Well, what's that one about? They just send out somebody like you. This doesn't bother you one little bit, does it?"
Just rolls out here.
I says, "No, not. It really doesn't. But, you know, if you kind of slow down a little bit, we'll see if we can get this settled up." And she said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" Well, I said, "How much damage you got done?" "Well, you've taken out these carrots and you've done this." And I said, "Well, we can pay for this. We'll do this. We'll do this. Get this smoothed out for you." Well, before long, I went in that tea with her, so we got it settled. He says, "I just knew hiring to do this to me."
I had the kind of the same experience, you know, and one guy looked at me like, "There's no damn way I can make you mad, is there?" I said, "I don't get paid to get mad."
The time that he told the people he put on the bushel basket. They were complaining. They put all this money in the bush basket and leave.
Yeah.
Well, people are. It's sad though to see people who get so wrapped up in a cause like that, and they completely almost destroy their family. And you know, we've both seen that. Right?
Yep.
They just get so keyed in on that they're going to do this. So you're still you're still appraising?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting retirement career.
Oh, I'm enjoying it. It's close to home. I don't have to fight that traffic, and I pick my own hours and my own days and my own assistants.
Yeah, he has one that keeps him living and one that keeps him working.
Two important areas to be concerned about. I wonder if we can go back to an area that's, as I mentioned at the very beginning, and that is politics. I don't mean to get into the lead, but there's been a lot, when we came in the township in 1953, and there were a lot, even at that time, there were kind of municipal politics, like there was a sense of there was an old guard, and then he showed, say, a new guard, that type of thing. Is that, you used to have a nomination meetings every year, and there were that. What and people were a lot more tuned in and a lot more, shall we say, directly caring and directly involved and knew new people and so on than they do today. Is that a fair statement?
I think so.
Well, they were going to follow up their complaints. Now they complain and they don't attend. They just write letters and things. They were there. They were interested enough to be there, I think.
They weren't as busy in those days.
Well, you could find time if you want to.
And of course,
more fun in it than what there is now. Nobody will talk to you now. They won't listen to you.
You know, and now, you know, you can make a mistake now, but it doesn't really matter because there's no election for 3 years anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be, there'd be an election in a year. There could be an election next year again. I'm not sure, but maybe the 3 years is maybe better. It gives the council a better chance, but then you get some bad councillors in there, and they're too long. You get some good ones in, they're not in there for long enough, but if they're bad, they're for too long. So I don't know which is better.
Of course, the other thing, too, is that in those days, too, local council would meet, I would say, once a month or something like that, yeah. And there'd be council meeting once a month, and that was up after the business.
Yeah, that's right.
And today, you know, it's a full-time job. You know, you're on committee meetings 3 days of the week. Leads into provincial and federal politics. Did that area, it being intuitive, a lot more personal interest in politics?
Well, yeah, I think people were more, you were pretty well always either a Grit or a Tory years ago. Now, I don't think you really know what anybody is. There's a few of the old diehards, but I don't think they stick to their party lines anymore like they used to.
My grandfather always said he'd vote for a dog, not for the conservative it had to be. It didn't matter who was running.
Yeah, right.
Or what kind of person they were. They were conservative, that's what he voted. My grandfather, I mean, it was known fact.
Mm-hmm.
My grandpa Wilcox. And I had a history teacher, Gabler, and found out years after that he held the mortgage on the Jessup farm over here. And yet he wore the same suit all the years I went to high school, same raggedy shirts. He was a wealthy man, and he imagined being living and holding mortgages down in Scotch settlement. And he was a liberal, and he used to just at me every Friday afternoon to get me up on my feet to talk history. And that was it. He was a firm liberal, Mike, and he knew what my family were. And he'd say, "All right, June, it's your afternoon to get up to talk about your favorite Sir John A." Spend the whole period just talking about that, kidding me. And then he'd go to the store and kid my dad, row with my grandfather. It was a real thing. It was part of their life.
And then they went and bought the paper. You could tell every morning when they went to get the paper which one was the girl or the one was the boy. And they just, when they got them the papers, it used to be so fun. These kids would stand there and watch this excitement go.
It was a real part of their life.
Yeah.
But now it isn't.
Most people don't even know. Don't even know the difference.
No.
They don't even know the buildup of government from the lower level. This was one thing I always tried to teach.
Did you ever run for council in West Wilmer?
No, I never.
Mm-hmm. Did your father?
No. Yeah.
Yes, I.
My dad was deputy for one term.
Mm-hmm. I was the first woman on the school board in West Wilmer.
My wife was.
You were?
First one.
Oh.
Yes. And I was chairman when they built the additions to the school. But I was the first woman ever elected to the school board in West Wilmer. And I headed the polls. I had Grandpa going in the marsh. He was in his element. He just had a wonderful time. He'd take off in the morning with the truck and a whole lot of signs, the little cards, and go through that marsh. I bet I got every marsh vote nearly that knew Tom Brown. He must have told them how to vote anyway. I ran against Neil Weir and I don't know who else. No, I headed the poll.
Dad was a great campaigner in elections.
He was strictly conservative too.
Everybody knew it. He always had an old guy down in the marsh here, and he coached him how to vote and all that. But in spite of hell, he'd vote right, but he'd always put his name under the X. And he'd count the ballots and say, "There's my man again."
And then he said he never would read books. And I went to the library and I brought a book home here from the library on Mitchell Hepburn. And one day Bob went in a few days later and he wouldn't talk to Bob. He had to finish the book. He was enthralled, and I brought him several after that. Yeah. Loved all.
Did you ever read that book?
No, I never did.
Did you, George?
Is it in the library here?
Yes, it was. It's in the other library.
You'd enjoy it.
Yeah.
I read it. It's good.
I got a kick out of it because I was down in that country quite a bit there. So.
He and Grandpa never read books, but did he ever? He really enjoyed
I just
that.
Showed him one chapter when I just carried it over to him one afternoon, and I said, "Just read this chapter." And he got reading it. And, well, I'll read on a little bit. And he said, "Can you leave this book with me?"
So then I used to periodically bring something home like that. There was a Dean Baker book and a different one.
But as you say, though, politics was an entirely different world.
Oh, great.
In those days, and you couldn't.
Your social life was around it too.
Yeah. Same time, there can be tales told about Hepburn and Earl Road too. I can remember one guy was around Parliament Buildings and he wanted to find Hepburn. And this was when the election was going on. Nobody knew where he was. One guy said, "You get me a car. I'll take you to where it is." And you know where he found him?
Bootleg.
On the porch of a prominent man's place in Newton Robinson. They were both having a little...
Two farmers talking together.
Little Johnny Walker's. They were both going out to speak that night.
Well, into a certain sense, politics was a game. It was a game. And to a certain... we've kind of lost that now. We're almost to the point that it's become all vindictive. Like, you have to go and you have to persecute. This is what we saw when we were in the States, like in Lake Florida. Look at the job that they've done, this Clinton guy. Absolutely unbelievable. And when we go into our next election here in Canada, we'll have the same thing. And it will be out to destroy. Out to destroy the profile, the personality, or destroy a person. It'll be a campaign against the Mulroney's, or one against Christian, and the guy they're going to really bring out everything, whether it's true or not.
And it's just be the timing of when they bring it up.
It's when they bring it out, and you keep on putting this little thing and this little thing and this little thing. It's a shame, really.
What do you think brought Mitch in? What was his main politics? What really won him? Do you think it was the beer vote? The beer vote that brought him in, or what? Or they just got fed up the conservatives, or what? Like they did.
It's all in that book.
Is it in the book?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, okay, then that'll answer the question.
Well, it was in the other library, I presume it came
here. They put it out on the wire.
Mm-hmm. Another good anecdote you hear, I've heard that many a breakfast Earl Rowe had with Saint Laurent when they were having problems down there and they didn't know what to do. You know, Earl was an old established conservative and Saint Laurent would call him up. "I want to have breakfast. I want to discuss a few things." You know, they'd fight like hell in Parliament, but at the same time, they had a lot of respect for one another.
They had a few drinks together, and then
they had a lot of respect for one another.
As long as Trevor wasn't around.
Oh, well, I guess he knew that Earl.
He knew, but he did a lot around the house, though. He had to get in the mark.
One thing we didn't touch on we were going through all the experiences, that was the recreation and sports things like that. I know a lot of you have followed sports in Bradford very closely over the years. So, how far back do you go on remembering teams and involvement and that type of thing with sports?
I was never a very good sportsman. I enjoy sports, but I was never very good. And I tried to be good, but I wasn't. We had an old Scotch settlement team. That's back, I don't know how many years ago.
How old would you be?
Oh, I'd probably still be in public school.
So 60 years.
That's when the Gould boys, Mel Sutherland and Dan Sutherland, and Mookie Ferris. You remember those, Joe?
Mookie Ferris. Oh, Mook. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Earl Grey.
Yeah, Earl Grey. Flicker.
Flicker Grey. And the Coots boys. They were in a league with Bradford, Mount Pleasant, Fennels, Pinkerton. Pinkerton had a team. Earl Carr used to play for them, for Pinkerton. Well, then that kind of died out. Then we got another league going that I played in a bit back about the 40s, which had Bradford, and Vaughn Head was in that other league too. Doug MacArthur and Herman Harvey and Gordon Bradley.
I remember
that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gordon.
Yeah. And then we had, then it kind of died out again until it got going. Oh, back in the 50s when they had that pretty good league. When Harry Couse and Steve, pitched for Bradford to run the bowling alley.
Simone.
Steve Simone, Joe McGanny, Ken Tupling, Carson, and the Giffen boys played for Mount Pleasant, and Harry Couse pitched for Cookstown.
Was Narasnack around then? Harry?
No, that's
Harry
back the league before.
Oh, yeah.
Narasnack played for, and John Cobine played for Mount Pleasant, and the McLeod boys. And Sutton, wasn't there Sutton? And
yeah.
Stewart's?
Stewart's, yeah.
Yeah.
And you played a little curling, had some curling with the junior farm.
Yeah. Then we get into our, when our son started to play.
Trucking. Getting around.
Right.
And we used to send them, one of us would drive them to the golf course, leave them for the day, and go and pick them up.
Yeah. What about, where was the Bradford Fair? Was it going? Did you remember Bradford when they had a fair?
Yeah, I showed the last team at Bradford Fair.
What year was that?
1939, 39-40. Well, it was a casualty of a few bad years of bad weather, and everything seemed to go bad for them, and they just had, of course, the war was just starting in 39-40. You see, they were just going financially backwards.
What time of year was it held?
Well, that was the point. It was never held until about autumn, October sometime. I think they had ran into two or three years in a row of bad weather, and maybe Manitou. I don't know if there was two or three things that thought had happened to Bradford.
Fairgrounds are where the community center is now.
Yeah. They owned the bottom part that was sold to the Grape Factory, and the town owned the top part.
Was the grandstand there at that time, or did it disappear?
No. Well, it was there when. Wait a minute. Was there a grandstand?
You burn?
Was there a grandstand there?
Yeah.
Was there? Well, and I guess it must have been there.
Not too much of the one. No,
up above the horse stable?
No, it was a separate building, and it was down just about, I think, if I remember right. Where the pump house is now, between the two buildings, it's in the site in there, right?
Yeah.
With the cattle, you remember the yard they had there. And then they opened the inner field there with the racing horses.
Yeah, racing track.
The the tower or whatever you call it.
Well, we've covered a lot of territory. They say when you go back to tonight for to sit down for lunch or sit down for supper, one thing we forgot to tell him was this. They probably forgot to tell him was that.
Well, I was interested to hear that man talking about Mrs. Steele, like I knew Mrs. Steele. You know, he was in the paper. About the antique, has the antique house there, and about something about her. Well, I knew Mrs. Steele.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have her over to judge the costumes at Halloween, and she used to come over to the Valentine party and so on. Little tiny lady. I am old when I think about it, because I used to visit her, too. And I used to visit the gardener's head once a year for tea.
Oh,
and everything was made of honey that she went in, and can't even think of her name. She used to be the gardener lady, the two boys.
Maud and...
No, I didn't know her.
Emily?
No. Can't think of her name.
Never
no, she was maiden, and her two brothers were with her there, but she was really kind to me, but she'd always have me once a year for tea.
Steele's Corners was named after that Steele?
Yes, Steele's Corners School, And that's the house, the school's turned into a house that Irishman...
Who's that, Mac?
Mac.
He's quite a violin player.
Yeah, I've seen him on Channel 10.
Every week, or third Thursday in the month, they're down at the Hall, and it's good to make down there. If you want to meet anybody from around here, go down. Silver Clack Nerve, you just play, you drop it in, you go in the door.
How many kids, when you were there, how many children?
Eight
kids?
About eight, and I got up to about 14 in 3 years. I started it at $1,700. I think it's 17 or 18, I'm not sure, in 1950. That's what I got. We were told to ask, I think, for 1800, and I think I got 17, and then I got it raised each year. And I moved into Bradford. Getting married, and I went to see Brock Evans about a job, and I got and Mr. Morton, and I was hired in Bradford, and I think I got about 22 or something. That boy, I was really on top of the world to think that we were getting married and I was going to have all this money.
Yes. Okay, well, I think that's we've pretty nearly exhausted the realm of starting to pull things. Thanks very much for coming in. Thank you very much. We'll I'll copy this for you, and we'll make a copy of it available to you, and so you can put it in your family archives, keep it for another generation.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a strange thing that you don't appreciate until it's too late.
That's great.
I must look up these two tapes. They must be around where Jim had to do it for school project. But this aside, I have one aunt left who's 86 or something, and my father's sister. And I think that she probably knows a lot of things that I... But it's just, you don't go and sit down and talk with them. Well, she doesn't go to the house now. She can't walk outside. She's a hip replacement and all this. But she probably knows. That's how I got Annie Dunn from her and so on. Because on my father's side, I have nothing. But on my mother's, I have this book. It's like this. But I've never really sat down with it. But I understand they weren't first English, and because there was no English, no one to talk to. It just filtered into the system.
You have paper corner?
Yeah. I just never have done it,
I don't really know what you mean. It takes time to do it. It takes the inclination.
That's right.
Anyway, well, thank you.